Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. 13 minutes past 9 o'clock. Very nice to have you all with us on this Thursday morning. It is the 27th of August, and we're really glad to have you here. It's very nice. We have a lot to discuss. A lot is going on. It's hard to even know where to begin this morning. A busy, busy news day. We have Kenosha, Wisconsin to talk about. We have changes in testing from the CDC to talk about. Of course, it was the third night of the Republican National Convention. And, oh, by the way, a hurricane hit the United States and the Gulf Coast. So a lot to talk about, and we will do so over the next 80 minutes or so. So let me introduce everybody, and we will get started. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
I'm here.
Excellent. If you wish to expand, great. If not, we'll just take that.
Let's just put it this way. I'm here.
All right. Good to go. Judy Patrick is here as well. She is Vice President for Editorial Development of the New York Press Association. She's fresh from a taping of the Media Project, so I think she's here and ready to go, too.
Yeah, I think Alan's feeling a little beat up, but you know what? Sometimes he just deserves it.
He may have a different view.
Way to go, Judy.
Yeah, he may have a different view on that. But, well, thank you for being here. I appreciate you you doing it for a long time. Investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor Rosemary Armeo. Good morning, Rosemary. How are you?
Good morning.
And Siena College professor of comparative politics Vera Acarius-Kelly. Good morning, Vera. How are you?
Good morning. I think I'm pretty good.
Good. Excellent. Well, if that changes, let us know. We'll try to make you comfortable as we possibly can.
Well, let's as soon as we get started on some of these nasty topics, I'm sure my mood will change.
I understand. Yeah, there's a lot here, and it isn't all good news or really any of it, but we'll get started. Let us begin with because we have talked about the Republican National Convention and the Democratic National Convention as our lead story over the past 2 weeks. We have one more night. Tonight is the final night of the RNC. Last night, Mike Pence made a case for Trump as law and order president. All of that taking place as the Blake shooting continued to reverberate, the shooting of a black man in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Republican used the third day of their national convention to portray President Trump as a strong defender of conservative principles on law enforcement, defense, and the economy, emphasizing his law and order credentials as social unrest flared again from another police shooting of a black man. Vice President Pence, the headliner of the night, took the lead in painting Trump as projecting leadership abroad and overseeing a strong domestic economy before it was battered by the coronavirus pandemic. And one of the night's sharpest attacks against Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden, Pence warned, "You won't be safe in Joe Biden's America." He does things in his own way, on his own terms, Pence said of Donald Trump, who is in attendance for the speech at Fort McHenry in Baltimore. Not much gets past him, and when he has an opinion, he's liable to share it. He certainly kept things interesting, but more importantly, President Donald Trump has kept his word to the American people. Alan?
Lying, 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 liar. And now his vice president takes up the cudgels and does the same thing. Look, we know what's happened here. And we know where this whole thing is going. I'll tell you, I'm about to say something extraordinarily unpopular with our audience. But I'm scared to death over the way in which the Republicans are going to be using and the Trump people are going to be using this very terrible outrage that is going on. To me, the idea of going into the streets is exactly right. You should go into the streets, but you should behave. And to behave to the point where you don't burn down other people's businesses and the rest, because that is only going to help Trump. If there's a single thing that will elect Donald Trump, this is it. Now, you know, when you start thinking, well, wait a second, who's the president right now? Trump is the president. This stuff is going on in his watch. He's the one who's done so much bullying and name calling and racism that has made it happen. And yet, so A lot of people write to me and say, hey, come on now. It's not good protesters who are doing this. This is the Republicans trying to make this kind of trouble. I know no such thing. But in any case, it's the one thing that may get Donald Trump elected.
Rosemary Armeo.
I don't even know where to begin on this. The convention, I think, is playing not just to the base, but to the people in this country who want things to be normal. And Democrats are saying, okay, well, Biden will do this. But a lot of Republicans believe that Trump will stay the line. It's just the whole Republican convention has been just a smokescreen. If you listen to it, you think women are like really thriving. They're at the top levels of his administration. We're told COVID is in the past. Larry Kramer spoke about COVID all in the past tense. It was quite a remarkable grammatical lesson. And all the danger is from Biden wanting to go to socialism and to be so liberal, and that's just nuts. And the only climate mention, and again, to get back to the hurricane, which is bearing down, it's one of these horrible warm water fed hurricanes that's getting more and more powerful. The only mention of the environment that I've heard is crazy environmentalists, what do they call them, radical environmentalists, are ruining the logging industry. It's just been a remarkable thing to watch. And yet, at the same time that I hate it, I know that the amazing theatricality of it is appealing, and it's making a difference. I think the Republicans have been raking in money compared to Democrats lately. At least that's what Joe Biden tells me in his money appeals.
They seem a little desperate, don't they? Judy Patrick.
You know, keep in mind that last night the Hurricane Center was calling Hurricane Laura that the storm surge would be unsurvivable. And so instead of focusing on that, they were airing these incredibly boring speeches by, you know, a series of Stepford wives. The only one who really I thought was animated was Elise Stefanik. I thought she did a fairly good job, and I'm not sure about her content, but I thought she seemed real. I have come to the conclusion that I think air it on C-SPAN, but don't give either party all this free airtime, because I don't think it's really educating the public the way it should. Last night there were far more important stories to cover, from the NBA players essentially striking to the hurricane, to people trying to flee a hurricane during a pandemic. They don't want to go to a shelter. They don't want to get the virus. It is all these incredibly important stories. You can cover all things at once. But what I saw was too much of a domination on the convention, which was filled with untruths, or what we like to say in the business as lies, in this a mistaken attempt by the networks to give a sense of guidance, fairness. Oh, we gave the Democrats, you know, all this coverage last week. We have to give the same amount of coverage to the Republicans. No, you don't have to. If the news changes, if there's a hurricane that's unsurvivable, you need to put more emphasis on that. So that's my two cents.
Well, didn't that happen? I mean, I couldn't find a mention of the Republican convention as I got up at 2 o'clock in the morning and looked for it. It was all about the hurricane.
Well, if you stayed up later than 7:30 at night, Alan, you would know that during the night there wasn't a lot of hurricane coverage.
But there was no report 7:30 last night. The hurricane hit in the middle of the night.
Exactly. Right.
It wasn't a choice, hurricane or conference.
It's not either or, but during the night, while the convention was going on, certainly more coverage could have been given so people could prepare and flee, although at some point it was essentially too late for them to leave and they had to just hunker down.
Judy, I have so much respect for you, but, you know, you always come back to the should schmud. In other words, I come back to the is. These networks are going to, for all kinds of good and bad reasons, mostly bad, are going to continue to cover these conventions. So you're saying, and, you know, you certainly have a point, you know, that we shouldn't be doing it.
Exactly.
But that's should schmud.
Right. Well, they don't cover 1 hour of it. I mean, the main networks only covered the 10 o'clock hour.
Yeah, they have cut down, no question. You're right about that.
Vera.
So my walk away was basically that the Republican convention was about fear-mongering the first night. And it mixed in the following night with sort of this, you know, individual, elitist, privileged, as Judy called them, Stepford wives, speaking how President Trump cares. I found that, you know, it was swinging back and forth between assuring American, white Americans, privileged Americans, that their lives would be guarded and protected, their properties safe from marauding bands of the underclass. I mean, it was quite shocking, this fear-mongering and this sort of sense that we must put down the masses instead of addressing the profound inequalities, the disturbing exclusion of entire communities in this country. Instead of talking about social justice, racial justice, creating a future that is promising for young people, including discussing environmental concerns, economic issues, equality for women, it was this pretend world that we live in this privileged world and everybody else should acknowledge that.
Yes, but
and whatever you experience out there, that's not real. We live in the real world when, in fact, they talked about a bubble world that is entirely disconnected from most Americans. And then they superimpose this fear aspect and they, in fact, effectively scare people into thinking that marauding bands of people are coming from for their small houses or their gardens.
Now,
I did like Kelly McEnany's speech. I thought that was interesting.
Well, what was interesting about it, I'm a BRCA2 cancer patient. What was interesting about it? That she says she gets a call from the president. I'm sorry, I didn't get a call from the president. He did not seem to care about me. But, you know, because she's on the privileged inner circle and speaks about all the ideas that the president supposedly has and how deeply he cares about women, he doesn't seem to know anything or care anything about women's health. He hasn't addressed it specifically.
Did you notice the speeches by his children, his all many speeches by his many children? None of them told any personal warm stories. If I were talking about my father, I could talk about, like, some individual things he did that only I would know about. Nothing with our strangers could have given those same talks. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. It is interesting.
True.
They should get the sister on. Let her talk. I want to go back to Vera. Vera, here's my question to you. This is about an election. It's not about right or wrong. It's about how these guys are going to win. And it seems to me you're right on the right track when you said it's effective. When they say looting in the streets and all of the rest, that they are basically making a case to vote for them. And the question for you is, will it work?
Well, I don't think it will work for anybody who's already convinced that Trump and his entire swamp are a bunch of liars. I think it might be effective for those who are living in areas that are sort of bordering on inner cities where the pandemic has devastated the economy and people are beginning to organize and be out in the streets. That is frightening for a lot of people who are not familiar with social protests, or for community members in rural areas who are sort of observing this through television. And they're fearing that the status quo will change. And that, to them, means change in social status.
So the question is, will it work? Is it working?
It is working for some who have been on the fence, who are sort of, you know, fearing that social change, by that they understand racial change.
So
will
are you
come.
Saying Donald?
And yes.
Are you saying Donald Trump is going to win this election?
No, I think it'll tighten up, though. I'm still convinced that there are many, many more people supportive of change. The question is, in combination with meddling with the post office, maybe now, you know, communities being affected by environmental conditions such as the storm or a resurgence of the pandemic, how many people will actually want to stand in line to vote? That is my great concern. Will as many people participate in this election as we had hoped? And if that is a problem, we have a serious tightening of this election.
Anybody else on that?
Yeah, I think there will be
a good chance of winning.
Okay, Judy, first, go ahead.
Yeah, I think there will be. There is a tightening happening now. I think it can, but I think it can loosen up too. But I think there are a lot of people who were on the edge, who were going to lean Biden, and now they're thinking, oh yeah, maybe things are getting crazy, and I do need this law and order message tends to work, and people don't understand that. You know, Donald Trump is the president now, and he's actually, you know, what's happening is being exaggerated, and it's not Joe Biden's fault. So I do think, I mean, this is going to be a crazy close election, despite the fact that we've got 170,000 dead Americans due to a pandemic, despite all that has happened in the last 3 years. To me, it's incredible that it's going to be a close election, but I think it will be. And that's what's particularly scary. It's from November 3rd or 4th or whenever until Inauguration Day, what's going to happen.
We have to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue in this line and in this vein. We will also welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'd love to hear from you on this topic and the others we'll discuss over the course of the morning. panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Vera Carius-Kelly, and Judy Patrick making up the panel this morning. We do welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. Many letters on the convention and on campaigning and all things that are going on. Let's see. We go to Seth. Judy's out of her mind. I'm a Republican voting for Biden. She keeps thinking the same people that elected Obama for two terms can't think for themselves. We're not nearly as gullible as she thinks. We can decide for ourselves. Censoring coverage of the Republican convention is the same wacky elitist mindset that has alienated so many average voters from voting for a Democrat.
They can watch it on C-SPAN.
Joe says National Weather Service gave us a new word this time, unsurvivable. Let's use that word for a second Trump term, unsurvivable. How is Trump a law and order president when it was his supporter who shot three people as a militia member? The police watched him do it and no one arrested the kid as he walked by. Let's see. We go to Rich, who says, why are you providing a platform in NPR for Republican liars? This is the flip side. This is Judy's point. It is bad enough that they spew their lies at the RNC and daily through Fox and other conservative media outlets. NPR and WAMC should not provide a platform for people like Alice Stewart to blatantly lie. So if you cover the Democratic National Convention in full from 9 to 11 whatever, are you not bound to cover the Republican National Convention over the same 4 days?
Well, of course you are, number one. But I think what she's referring to is the interview this morning on NPR, I think, I may be wrong, about somebody who's voting for Trump and saying she likes him, she thinks he's a good guy, blah, blah, blah. And they are doing it, and I agree with her. You know, it was a real difficult attempt to show that they are nonpartisan and that they are fair, but it was a lousy story, and I was as upset with it as she is.
Anyone else?
By the way, NPR and WAMC are not the same. We have no control over what they do. That's for sure.
And I am arguing that neither convention, going forward, neither the Democratic or the Republican convention should be aired in its entirety from gavel to gavel. I'm saying it's free airtime, that it's that if you want it, C-SPAN can air them, and they do air them.
Yeah.
But I think giving them unchecked access to the American public that way, I think at this point in the American psyche, it's bad. I think there are better ways of covering politics than doing that.
I would have to agree. As somebody who grew up in Europe, in Germany in particular, I'm still not, even after living for decades in this country, I'm still not used to the fact that presidential cycles are so long. Germany has 6 weeks of an electoral cycle for the chancellor position. The information is much more factually based. We're talking about economic data. We're talking about social conditions that need to be addressed or any kind of emergent problem. The different parties talk about what their agenda is. They present it to the public, and then there is a vote. This sort of show performance that we see for days in these conventions is utterly appalling. It lacks content. It lacks information. It's just about a likability showing, it seems. It's performance art, and it takes years to go through this. Instead of governing, instead of focusing on problems in the country, we do this. It's like a circus performance in this country.
So what are you saying? Are you saying that we should be more like Germany?
I think our you can pick other models. I think the whole concept of the election taking almost it's like we elect somebody and then that person needs to almost immediately return to fundraising and electoral politics instead of governing, instead of focusing on the people's issues. So there's too much money in the process. There's too much media circus hype around these people. And instead of them focusing on what they should be doing, they make fundraising. They go to fundraising events and do, these sort of conventions.
Rosemary?
This is all in what Alan calls the shoulda, but it ain't ever going to happen thing. Americans are just not
I believe it's should.
Have a better way of electing people than we do.
Yeah.
But what can happen is the media can make an obvious decision that these conventions are out of date and no longer news-making. We don't have to cover them at all, much less gavel to gavel. The candidates are already known. It's done. We don't have to cover them as all-encompassing, entertaining, and debating events, which they were for many years in the United States, but are no longer since we have primaries.
And Rosemary, I also wonder, I have to say, I don't think that many people watch these events anymore, these convention events.
No, the ratings are way down. You're right.
Yeah. So I can't even think of, we've started classes at Siena College. I asked, and not a single one of my students is watching any of this.
Only one of my students knew that it was happening.
What is the rationale for covering it? It's not viewership.
Yeah.
It's some weird sense of fairness. We covered one, so we'll cover the other. Mm. No, you don't have to do that. Judy, you pointed that out, that the media gets to decide what they think is newsworthy.
Judy?
Yeah, and last night, boring people saying boring speeches was not newsworthy. Because
Pence giving a speech supporting Trump. Wow, that's newsworthy. Shocking.
Yeah, and like Kayleigh McEnany, she gave a fairly good speech, but she was missing. Reporters like to know who, what, when, where, and how, why, and how. She was talking about how the Trump administration somehow supported her in the fact that she had a pre-existing condition. And I was wondering, how did that work? How exactly did the Trump administration help her? Because I think that they have been against Obamacare, which supported pre-existing conditions.
Well,
absolutely.
I mean, basically her entire argument was she got a phone call from the president because he's a kind man. That was the point of her entire speech.
But
let's
but
not
you forget
let's
that he
not
also
look at
called
him as
Jim
a...
Jordan's uncle, who's I guess his brother, when his nephew was killed. And he did not throw his children out of the house. That all proves it's piling on the evidence of what a kind and warm-hearted man he is.
Paul writes and says, I have not heard a single Republican politician or convention speaker condemn violence in the streets by police. We are witnessing a continuation of lynching of black people by other means, and it's not condemned by white Republicans. Unfortunate but limited violence by protesters may be used by the Trump administration to declare an emergency and martial law.
And you know what's underlying all this is the proposal to voters that what the Trump administration wants to do, well, after we all agree that they in fact continue to stir up and flame, you know, use the flames of this unrest, that what they're proposing to voters is that they want to send in troops and crush American citizens. That what they want to do is not address the underlying conditions of this injustice or review the unfairness of the system that treats people differently depending on what race or what class you belong to. No, what they want to do is crush them, silence them, destroy dissent, and assure those that are already in a position of a certain level of comfort that don't worry, the status quo will be assured. What in fact will be happening, if that is the outcome, is that it just is a matter of time when the flames will reemerge. Instead of addressing what is the fundamental wrong in this country, we try to crush dissent. That is the proposal on the table.
Louise wants to know, hey, what's the message for the military clothes? Melania, Pence's wife, should we be preparing for our own, like some camouflage perhaps?
Well, you know, she has a look about her that you could refer back to in my country during the 30s and 40s. I'm telling you, that outfit was astoundingly similar to what the kind of outfits my mother was made to wear when she was recruited in the Bund für junge Mädel. You know, that kind of stuff is just really, really militaristic kind of underlying messaging that goes out there that, you know, we belong to a certain group. You want to belong, be part of us. You know, we send a message about who's on the inside and who's on the outside. It's astounding.
We got one more letter before we go to a break. This letter from Paul. Alan is exactly right. The violence in the streets is the one main thing that could get Trump reelected, not just because of the pummeling messages that the Republicans are espousing, but because of the lame response by the Republicans. And if Biden doesn't go to the swing states one or more times, remember Hillary, he's toast. He doesn't have to have rallies, but a socially distanced town hall in each state would be effective. Come on, Dems, where's your chutzpah? So let's pause there, and we will come back. We have many more letters to discuss, and we will go on. We welcome you to write as well. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. 47 minutes past 9 o'clock. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Judy Patrick, and Vera Akarios-Kelly. Back to the letters. Sean writes, I think Trump, the bully, has partly frightened the press into covering the convention because if they don't, he and his angry mobs will attack them. Arnold says, I think it will be the presidential debates that will have the most influence on the undecided voters. What do we know about that, Alan? Is that typically the case?
I don't know, to be honest with you. I think in the case of John Kennedy and Richard Nixon, it certainly was the case that the television, we have all heard this so many times, you really would run and get the basin. But we do know that Kennedy did very well on television because he was handsomer than Nixon. And Nixon won on the radio where he was not, you know, pictured with his 5 o'clock beard. So I think these can happen. When I saw the Hillary Trump debate, and you know the threatening posture of Trump, And I just wondered how many people would resent this. Would women resent it? Would voters resent it? Apparently not. I think he got away with it. So I think it varies from time to time and situation to situation.
Rosemary?
I think the results show that debates do not have a huge effect unless there's a gaping, horrible error. Gerald Ford did it when he said, no, Russia doesn't have any influence over Eastern Europe. And that was so stupid that he lost a lot of support, even though he's quite an intelligent man. On the other hand, Trump has said stupid, inaccurate things for years now, and it hasn't had an effect. So I don't really anticipate that the debate will have a big effect. I personally am looking forward to the October 9th debate between Kamala Harris and Pence, Michael Pence. I think that will be really interesting to watch. Mm-hmm. He will not be able to get away, as he did last night, with just saying things that are blatantly untrue.
Kevin said, when Trump parades so many black speakers through his convention, do you think his racist supporters are put off? Are they sophisticated enough to see through the ruse? That's an interesting question.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry?
I mean, if I could just say something, I thought it was fascinating, that particular aspect, because in essence, it was powerful white people granting brown people a right, you know, a privilege. Passing on, making some kind of a judgment and elevating a few brown people to a higher position. I mean, it was shockingly obvious, at least to me. So, I think they are basically thinking, oh, that's a clever thing to do. I think Trump supporters are thinking this is a great and clever thing to do. And it shows that we're not racist. It shows that we actually can decide between people that deserve support and people that do not.
Well, is it or isn't it? In other words, we are both putting them down for doing this quite correctly. But on the other hand, they're saying, and you're quite right saying this, they're saying it works. Does it?
Well, the problem I have with this is it's an inappropriate location and it's not a general policy. How about we address general policies that fairly and justly represent American values?
Instead of hand-picking
people and using them for show performance.
You're a political scientist. Everything you're saying is exactly right. But you're an intellectual. This is not about intellectualism. This is about winning. And the question is, do people fall for it?
People fall for it because racists don't believe that they're racist. They don't. They look at that and say, "Oh, yeah, we're not racist. Look, there are people of color in the convention. We're not racist at all." It confirms to them that they're not racist, even though they are.
Hmm. And you know the whole thing about I mean, most of the decision makers within the Trump administrations are males, but women say that are participants in this regime. This is the most empowering environment for women. And I just go,
oh my God,
who believes this?
Rosemary.
That was amazing, right?
Rosemary.
Who believes this?
Oh, I was just like, I was holding on to the seat so as not to get up and yell at my computer while I was watching this. Ridiculous. His daughter-in-law is talking about how there are more women in top-level positions. And then she named, numerous ambassadors. There are not top-level people who are women. There's the wife of the Secretary of Transportation, which is a lesser position in the cabinet, and she's only there by dint of her marriage. It's ridiculous. And yet, Judy's right. This is not to convince those feminists. It's not going to convince people who think he's a racist, but it will give cover to those people who want to vote for Trump for whatever misguided reason. They can say, no, I'm not a racist. You know, look at all Herschel Walker says he's not a racist. I just listened to him. It just is an excuse, and it's effective. It's very effective. I'm really worried he's going to win. I hate this convention, but mostly I hate it because it's so theatrically and perfectly put together. The man is a showman, and it will make a difference to people. And let us not forget, we did because you brought it up earlier, the violence going on right now is in one of those swing states. It's in Wisconsin. And yes, you are right. Biden better get his butt out there and start talking up his working class roots and his sense of fairness because Trump is making an impact there.
Jim writes to us and says, of course Trump is threatening the protesters and is actively campaigning to paint them with the same brush as the rioters and looters. Trump thinks that protesters and anyone who opposes him are mere enemies to be crushed. His agenda, while a businessman, and his followers, I call them brown shirts, are going to buy into that and cheer when these people are beaten and tear gassed or otherwise violently suppressed. What Trumpsters don't see is that the same kind of authoritarian action can be turned against Trumpsters as well. Germany, the Soviet Union, and many other countries learned that lesson the hard way. Trump is taking pages out of Himmler's playbooks, and Trump followers just refuse to believe it. We go to Joe, who says, stupid Americans, that is what Trump knows about the U.S. First, he uses Russia to cheat and win, destroys government institutions, and has been surrounded with nothing but criminals. List goes on. If Trump gets reelected, we really are stupid Americans. Vladimir has taught Trump well. Lisa checks in and says, I saw one article about frustration that the Dems are being too silent this week, and sadly, I agree, given how Trump attacked them last week. But what should the Dems and Biden's campaign be doing to counteract these lies? I know Harris is going to speak tonight, but what else? It's a great question.
Well, I'm a believer in positive messaging, because all we get is, especially, I must say, it is a heavy burden for Americans right now, dealing with the coronavirus, dealing with fears related to the economy. We hear numbers of, you know, another million filed for unemployment claims, racial and social injustice protests. I mean, it is a heavy burden. I want to hear from Biden how we are going to create a better America, an America where women are equal, African Americans and people of color and indigenous people have a voice and are equal. I want to create a world, and I want to live in a world where we all have opportunities. And I think talking about a future economy, a way to bring us to a place where we can create, you know, build a future for our young people, I think is an important message that includes environmental issues. The storm will probably leave devastation in its path. I'm just waiting to get sort of information about the poor people in Louisiana and Texas suffering through this right now in the middle of a pandemic. So I want to hear a plan forward, a message of hope, and a change that we can actually put in place in the near future.
You know what? You'll get some of that. But you won't get down to the level and the nubs that you're talking about, because the reason that Biden is the candidate is that he reassured a lot of centrist Americans that he would not be radicalized. I'm not saying, because I know people are already typing on their computers, I'm not saying that that's the way it should be. It's just that that's the way that it is in this country. And Biden, if he offers a hope to people, if he says the right things, that'll be good. But if he goes too far, Vera, then I think what ends up happening is he loses the election. And that's something we don't want to have happen.
I have 3 minutes, and I just want to get to as many letters as I can before the top of the hour, and then we'll move on to other topics when we come back. Jim says, I see a parallel between the problems with certain cops on a police force and certain Catholic priests. The priesthood became a gathering place for some pedophiles. The police forces have become a gathering place for cops that have a desire to carry out a vengeful mission. In the case of the church, it took management a long time to acknowledge the problem. Police forces behind the blue wall have not yet acknowledged that they attract a certain undesirable element. We go to Hannah, who says, you're using coded language when you say there are good and bad protesters, right and wrong ways to protest, and to tell protesters to behave themselves or Trump will get reelected is disgusting. Think about the early stages of other fascist regimes, and with the hindsight of history, would you tell any of those resistance movements to behave themselves? Question why you think what you do. We go to
Let me say, if this election is lost, it's going to be because Trump and Pence are looking at certain misbehaviors. I love the idea that people are in the streets. I love the idea that they're protesting. But I'm telling you now, I'm not above thinking that they may be inciting some of this stuff themselves because it's so powerful for them.
Ken writes and says,
so I totally disagree with that letter.
Ken writes and says, I too am terrified. I think that many Americans are, in fact, malleable and can easily be manipulated by Trump's fear-mongering. I also think there is a substantial population of racists and xenophobes out there who don't show up on the polling data. I'm absolutely terrified about how this is all going to play out. I have multiple anxiety attacks every day about this. We then go to Josh, who says, I find it insane that Trump can tweet images of the violence at protests, saying that this is what a Joe Biden presidency will look like, when this is what Trump's presidency looks like right
now.
I'm losing my mind, says Josh, hearkening back to the last letter. One more. Denise says, in between parading selected blacks onto the stage and the couple who pointed guns at each other while trying to intimidate peaceful protesters showed who Trump's white supporters really are. Nobody has been fooled. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have more letters. We have much more conversation, many more topics as well. We welcome you to join us. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. All of that and more coming up. First News with Ray Graff. The NBA's restart inside a restricted bubble at Disney World, which has proceeded smoothly for more than a month without any positive novel coronavirus tests, came to a screeching halt Wednesday when the Milwaukee Bucks refused to take to the court for a playoff game against the Orlando Magic to protest the police shooting of Jacob Blake in Kenosha, Wisconsin. The league announced the cancellation of all three games scheduled for Wednesday as a result, and a meeting of NBA players later Wednesday night cast doubt on whether the postseason would continue at all. The unprecedented decision to postpone the games was quickly followed by a similar decision by the WNBA, which postponed three scheduled games across the state in Bradenton, and by teams and players in numerous other professional sports. In Milwaukee, the Brewers announced they would not play their Major League Baseball game Wednesday night against the Cincinnati Reds, the Seattle Mariners game against the San Diego Padres, and the Los Angeles Dodgers game against the San Francisco Giants were also postponed. This is a fairly big deal in the sense because they underscore an emerging new reality in big-time sports in which athletes are increasingly emboldened to express themselves on racial injustice and other social issues, and leagues are finding ways to accommodate their views. They're finding ways to accommodate their views, however, they are, of course, not playing the games, and that is how long will that go on for is one of the questions that remain. Who would like to start?
Let me just start, Joe, and say, do we all remember a time when anybody who took a knee was going to get fired? You know, I mean, we have progressed to a point here where really this is quite justified and quite serious. And I think that the people who are running these leagues understand that they're no longer going to be able to get away with the kind of crap that they were doing before. So I'm very encouraged by this. I think it's great.
Rosemary?
Yeah, I agree that athletes have learned, thank you to Mr. Kopernik, he is a hero, that they can use their popularity, their power to do good, and that's what they're doing. They're standing up for social injustice, and yes, that's why they have clout, because those games represent money to the owners and to the franchises, and they can endanger it. So it's the best kind of use of power to make change for good. I'm a big fan of this.
Judy Patrick.
You know, this is how to get America's attention. Whenever I check and see what's trending on Twitter, for example, if there's an athletic event of any kind, it's always the trending thing. People don't really care about politics that much, but they do. A lot of people really care about sports. You know, people of color are criticized, or people who are fighting for racial justice, they get criticized when they march in the street. They get criticized when they respectfully kneel during the playing of the Star Spangled Banner. And now they're getting criticized for striking, for not playing games. Jared Kushner's, who is a very privileged kind of guy, who's I would say has been handed everything he's ever made, had the audacity today or this morning to criticize the players for, you know, they are in a position they are able to take a night off where a lot of people in America aren't. Well, you know, he is privileged as well. I applaud the NBA players. This country needs a good shaking up, and this is a fantastic way to do it. It's nonviolent protest in the best possible way. But this needs to be a conversation that's not just for people of color. It's for all of us to have, and it's not just players in the NBA. It's people of all. Sorry, I remember yesterday was very dramatic. One of the sports broadcasters' names. Ken Smith, yeah. He walked off the stage. He goes, I just can't do this. And yeah. I have to stand in support mm-hmm. of the
Got
players
and
as
left.
Well.
Yeah. And
I wanted to, I wanted to also, yep.
No, I just want to say that Rosemary rightfully brought up Colin Kaepernick, but of course you go back to mm-hmm. Muhammad Ali and his decision not to fight in the Vietnam War and black athletes coming right. together to show their support for that decision as well. Mm-hmm. Yes, Vera.
On that note, I wanted to highlight a female black athlete, Naomi Osaka, tennis player, who decided not to play in the semifinals in the Western and Southern Open in New York. She's the highest paid female athlete in the world. Last year, I think she raked in $37 million in prizes and endorsements. And she decided, before anything was canceled in terms of the tennis world, to just walk away and say, I'm a black woman. I'm an athlete. I can no longer participate in these kinds of sports events for the entertainment when we are struggling with racial justice, social justice issues, and I must stop playing until this is addressed. A very powerful voice in a sort of different kind of world from basketball and football discussions, I wanted to point out.
Fiona writes, and says, I think the most effective way to get change in our racist system would be to expand the NBA boycott. If all people of color stopped demonstrating, which feeds into the Republican narrative, and simply stayed home, they might get the attention of this administration. What would our great economy look like with a widespread work stoppage?
Certainly what happened in Memphis with the bus boycott, right?
Right.
Right, it doesn't have to just be people of color. It could be all people.
Absolutely.
It's an issue for all of us.
Tom writes, finally, the men and women who have more power than they realize to affect change have begun to stand up and speak up. Men and women of the sports world who perform at the highest level in front of fans who are majority white and some whiter than white are saying no more. To think that on any given Saturday from September to November, over a million fans, again mostly white, of the Southeast Conference of the Atlantic Coast Conference sit in a stadium and root for their teams, which are 95% young black kids, or the same fans who go home and vote for people who'll do anything to take the vote away from them and their families, and a scene in an all-white neighborhood call the cops and, God forbid, shoot them. I understand it's not possible for a college to stand up and play because it's their future, so by the pros making a statement, it may filter down. Go to Deborah, who says, I love seeing the announcements during the Major League Baseball about racism and support of Black Lives Matter. And I am encouraged by all of the other sports boycotts, including professional tennis. This is visible to all sports fans, including our American president, which gives me hope.
Mm-hmm. But nothing from the National Hockey League yet, as I understand
the
it.
The NHL has not weighed in it that I am aware of. Amy says, why not more reporting on the white nationalists causing violence, guns in the Iowa legislature, a 17-year-old white Trump supporter murders two and wounds one? Where is the discussion of where the real threat comes from? This is a disservice to reality.
Well, I'm assuming, I think it is a troubling issue. We saw some images of this this young man, the 17-year-old Kyle Rittenhouse, who walked around and it likely was the shooter in this horrible incident of killing two people and injuring maybe several others. He will be, I think, indicted later on today or tomorrow, and we will get more information. But it was disturbing to see that he could walk around with a rifle. I think it was an AR-15 sort of style rifle. That he was not even arrested by the police at that point. So there is this deep, deep concern that some police departments have sympathies with this sort of militias, whereas, you know, higher public officials in higher office always say, you know, the last thing we want is armed militias to appear in our cities and engage in vigilante activities. But there seems to be some sense among some police departments that they're perceiving them as a threat the same way that many of us would here that are part of this conversation. So I find vigilante violence extremely distressing and worrisome for a democratic future in this country.
Bo writes and says, hello, everyone. Strike for a game or two, fine, but end the season and the platform for protest and awareness is largely lost. Most effective is what can be communicated while the games go on and many, many people, fans, are watching. Then Eric says, not all leagues are equal. The NBA is far more sensitive to the players and their views. The Milwaukee Bucks owners back the players' boycott. Then also on the protests, we go to this listener who says, do you think there are more likely voters who would blame Trump for the troubles in Wisconsin by creating a violent environment in this country? Are there more of these than those would look to him for a cure? It is happening on his watch. A point that we have been making this morning.
I certainly have made it a couple of times.
Yep.
You know, it's astounding.
Look, I think he's letting it build. And as he gets, he's looking at that calendar. And I think he's letting the protest build. And then he's going to send in his stormtroopers. And then say, see, I put it down. I know Susan Glasser, the writer, has made a big point of this, like, hey, let's pay attention. It's his watch this is happening on. It's his watch that he's going to put it down very violently. I am very worried about what's happening in the future as far as street protests.
And Rosemary, he showed us the playbook when he walked across the square from the White House. I mean, you know, and used his forces to do that. That was the playbook, and it's going to get worse.
And the governor of Wisconsin is not going to be like Oregon and Portland. They're going to let those guys in, let those federalized troops go in, and that's ugly.
Let us not forget that, the president took credit yesterday for sending in the National Guard, which he didn't do. The governor did, but still. And we just wonder how this will play out and see what happens over the next several days. During the George Floyd protests, we saw it went into many other cities. We saw it here in Albany. We saw it across this state, across our listening area of people taking to the streets. And we wonder if that'll happen again.
Just imagine what would have happened if that 17-year-old kid who shot those people was black. The 17-year-old white kid got to walk around the street for a little bit. If he had been black, very likely he would have been shot and killed that night by police officers.
Yes.
Or at least arrested.
It's hard to imagine that it wouldn't turn out that way. Yes. So we look at that and wonder what will happen, and obviously we'll follow. I also want to go to another story here before we go to a break, and that is on election security. The officials say that they see no sign of foreign threat to mail-in voting. Foreign governments such as Russia and China continued to try to interfere in the upcoming U.S. election, but officials have seen no evidence of countries trying to manipulate or manufacture mail-in ballots. With less than 70 days left until Election Day, federal authorities are ramping up their efforts to keep state and local election systems secure, particularly in light of Russian interference in the 2016 presidential race, which led to criticism that the government had been slow and soft in its response. In seeking to assure the public that federal, state, and local governments are paying far closer attention to the dangers of hacking and misinformation, officials said Wednesday that they also have not seen any indications that foreign governments are trying to tamper with what is expected to be an unprecedented amount of mail-in voting this year. We have no information or intelligence that any nation or state actor is engaging in any kind of activity to undermine any part of the mail-in vote or ballot, said one senior federal official. Those assurances are in contrast to statements by President Trump, who has repeatedly argued that mail-in voting is so ripe for abuse that he would block additional funds for the U.S. Postal Service to handle a surge in mail ballots this year. Alan.
Well, we have heard it over and over again that there is no proof, there's not even a hint that this is going on. And yet, it's the one way in which he can justify calling off an election or suggesting that, you know, the election was rigged. So we can certainly look forward to a lot more of it before this is over.
Rosemary?
Well, I'll say it outright. I have no confidence in the security of the American vote in this election. Mueller said it years ago, and we have yet to act. None of the no safeguards have gone into place to stop what happened in 2016. I think it was highly suspicious what happened. And I said all along, we haven't even looked, Mueller never even looked at security at the state level. And yet Trump won narrowly by winning in three states. And we know that there had been manipulation of voting in some states. I don't know if they were the same three, but we've done nothing to investigate that. And now he's what, 70 days out? We're talking about shoring up mail balloting, which we don't know how many people are going to use. I hope people don't use it. I hope they wear masks and bring sanitizer and scurry in and out and vote for real. And I think that I have no confidence, even in New York, that my vote will actually count. I'm going to do it, and I hope everybody else does. But why would we have any security at all? Why would we think, oh, yeah, this is all fine? It's good.
Anybody want to respond to that?
Yeah, but what Rosemary says is exactly right. And that is that she's feeling a lack of confidence. It's not that it's justified. It's what she's feeling. And that, of course, is what a lot of other people are feeling. And the more people who feel that, the more likely it is that some people won't vote.
In that respect, the Trump administration has been very effective in undermining the confidence of the American public in the voting system,
exactly.
Which means fewer people will vote, which he thinks will be to his advantage. The Postal Service has said repeatedly that they are able to handle the volume of ballots. I mean, they, for God's sakes, every day they handle millions and millions of letters. They can handle elections. I agree with Rosemary. I think the Russians are going to try to manipulate the election. I think they're already doing it, but it comes in the form of social media posts and engendering distrust of our system. But I think the people at the state level who run the elections have to do a good job of explaining to us how they're going to safeguard us, what protections they're going to put in place, so that when we mail in our absentee ballot or whatever you call it, or if we go to the polls, that our vote actually will count. They need to do that. We need to have faith in our system. And again, kudos to the Trump administration. They've done a really good job of undermining our faith in it.
Mm. So they have, and I just, so how do you know? I mean, if you're the average voter, how do you know? How do you know that your vote has been cast? Whether you're doing it in person, whether you're sending it, right. Exactly, Rosemary. I mean,
so no, there's no way. And it isn't just the Trump administration, although your complaints about them are
absolutely justified. It's the whole system. It's Mitch McConnell who shut down way back in Obama when he was trying to do something about Russians interfering. This has been going on. We know it happened 4 years ago, and we have done nothing, not study, not put extra money in, done nothing to stop it from happening again. And that's way beyond Trump. Way beyond Trump. Nothing's happened with Zuckerberg or with any of the social media companies to stop manipulation. What has happened since 2016 that makes you feel any more secure about the, even if you vote in person, which I'm planning to do, I still do not trust that my vote will count. And Alan, you've said all along that Biden needs a landslide. This is why. Maybe there's a limit to how many votes they can manipulate or miscalculate.
I mean, to me, this is honestly an amazing conversation to listen to, because these are the types of conversations I'm familiar with in my travels and research in Latin America and the Middle East. The kinds of conversations that people have, that you cannot trust your government, that people are out there, forces are out there manipulating. And we have achieved such lack of trust in our institutions and our public officials that now, either way this election comes out, the other side will argue there's fraud. I mean, it is shocking. This is the level of...
Putin has won. He has destabilized the once strongest democracy in the world, in history, and he has destabilized it.
We even saw Al Gore making a rare appearance the other day and instructing Biden not to give in. From a man who gave in.
He learned from his mistake.
Yeah, I mean, this is it's really, really troublesome. This is really, we are at a point where we're beginning to doubt the strength, the resilience of our democracy in the United States. I mean, whenever I talk to friends internationally or family members in Germany, everybody is just going like, what has happened to the United States? It's just shocking. We've lost all trust in anything you do. You are like the anti-example, not something to strive towards, but something to watch out for, to avoid. This is where the United States is at now.
Couple of letters before we get... Go ahead.
We've made America great again, Vera, don't you know?
Yeah, right.
Couple of letters before we go to the break. Steven says, people want to vote for something, not against something. For the last hour, all I've heard are the anti-Trump arguments from the panelists. I've not heard 2 minutes spent on arguments for Biden. I am a successful attorney and also a millennial. I have decades until retirement, and Biden just rolled out a proposal that would upend the traditional 401k and fundamentally change the way Americans save for retirement. Why haven't I heard this discussion?
Good thing you wrote a letter.
Here's why you don't hear about it. Because we Americans say, oh, we want to hear your plan. And then when there are plans, we ignore them. Look at Hillary Clinton. Look at Elizabeth Warren. Both of those candidates had remarkably detailed, spread out, thought out, really intricate plans. And they were ignored. Instead, you look then at something general. And Biden has this task. Obama pulled it off, but he's the only one that I can remember recently, where you have to kind of project that you have a plan, but you can't make it specific because then people will pick it apart and you'll lose. That's a really hard thing to do. And by the way, why isn't it enough to just not want more Trump? Why is that not enough reason to vote against him?
But I did say earlier, I mean, I agree with what a lot of what you say, Rosemary, but I did say earlier that Trump does need to, Biden does need to project a positive outlook for the economy. He needs to lay out how to rebuild, do infrastructure, all those things long promised and not detailed yet. I understand the fine detail that you mentioned.
I gotta hold you there.
Most Americans couldn't care.
We'll be right back. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and our last go-round this morning. Thank you very much for being with us, Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Vera Carias-Kelly, and Judy Patrick. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. And let's go to a couple of the other letters, and then we'll move on to our final topic. Jerry says, I'm telling folks to please vote in person. If at all possible, ballots can be thrown out for minor imperfections, plus the mail can be held up somehow, so I don't entirely trust it. Kathy says, does Rosemary think that the online track my ballot system in Massachusetts is all a fraud? I voted absentee for the September 1st primary, and that system says my ballot has been received and will be counted. What is preventing New York from setting up such a system?
Good point.
Inertia. I mean, we're 70 days out. Why didn't we start this back in 2016? It's a really good question, and I don't get it. And New York has been behind Massachusetts and many other places for a long time. It didn't have early voting. It's just catching up now. So I hope that they will work. I'm not saying, I mean, we're a smart people. There's no way that you can set up safe voting systems. We simply haven't done it. It's not from lack of knowledge.
Let's see. Jim writes, should we be concerned that the New York State Troopers Union endorsed Trump? I had hoped for at least a neutral stance.
Yeah.
Alan?
Well, we get people who write to us all the time and say, we shouldn't say, you know. But, you know, in terms of where people are coming from, where police unions are coming from, we do know that there are wonderful policemen. There really are. But that people who get attracted to police work are often on the right-hand side of what we would call the F scale. That diagnostic test that can be given to people to see politically where they are. So I'm not surprised. That's all.
Carolyn says the problem is not a lack of faith in our government. The problem is that our government has repeatedly proved it no longer deserves our faith. Thomas says, you introduced the topic of mail-in ballot fraud by talking about the threat of foreign interference. I don't think the mail-in ballot process is under this threat. The threat comes from domestic political actors like the Democratic and Republican parties. The threat comes from domestic political actors. Don't forget that in Albany, we are not far away from the days of $5 bills and dead people voting. Election manipulation is as American as apple pie and extends far past the last 4 years. If you think Russia is a threat, you're looking in the wrong direction. As Pogo once said, we have met the enemy and he is us.
So what is the point of that letter? That we've had crooked elections, that we, and I was the one who said it just the other day. There was something called walking around money. Libby agreed with it. I knew politicians who told me that they gave out a certain amount of walking around money to get people to the polls. But that doesn't mean that you give up. It doesn't mean you allow fixing of elections. It's ridiculous. So I don't get the letter.
Irene says, as disturbing as this administration is, I still have hope that my vote will count. As much as our American ideals are undermined, people have the power. Be persistent is my mantra. I am a realist with a belief in the ideal of America. It takes work, and right now, a lot of it.
And, you know, I really hope people will vote, because if they feel discouraged and believe that their vote does not count, I think that is exactly playing into the Trump playbook here. And people do need to vote by mail, in person. Whatever they choose is the right approach for them, but it is essential.
And let's not forget that 2 years ago, enough Democrats were elected so they gained control of the House of Representatives. So things can change.
On the matter of guns, Barbara writes in and says, Wisconsin has open carry laws thanks to the Republicans years ago. When it comes to the NBA, Rob says, are the boycotting athletes returning their pay? Donating it? Question mark. Have any of them formed any groups or coalitions? Very easy to say they are protesting, but they head back to their mansions and play Xbox.
Actually, there are a lot of athletes. There are a lot of athletes who have donated enormous amounts of money. I mean, yeah. I think that's just such a blanket, broad, unfair statement. I mean, you know, just look it up.
I agree. What do they have to do? Impoverish themselves to prove they're sincere? That's nuts. We don't require that of any middle class protesters or activists.
And keep in mind that they need to finish the playoffs. A big portion of their salaries comes from completion of the playoffs. If the playoffs don't happen, they will lose money.
Good point.
Good point, Jude. That's right.
All right.
I would rather see them and other wealthy people taxed more and fairly and let them pay that way rather than requiring them to give up money to prove they disagree with current policies.
So let us end in our last few moments together by talking about a congresswoman from our region, Elise Stefanik, who was on the national stage last night hailing President Trump while pitching New York voters on her bipartisanship. This is an article from The Washington Post. President Trump once called Elise Stefanik of New York a new Republican star as she defended him against Democratic criticism. But as she took the national stage Wednesday to implore voters to give Trump 4 more years, Stefanik is trying to sell constituents back home on a different sort of reputation, centrist. Once considered among the most moderate members in the House, Stefanik, over the past 2 years, has become one of Trump's most vocal champions on Capitol Hill, surprising even some of her own colleagues while propelling the youngest Republican woman in the House to GOP stardom. During the Trump impeachment proceedings last year, she was a regular on Fox News, forcefully rejecting complaints that Trump abused his oath of office and pressing a foreign leader to investigate his domestic political rivals. More recently, Stefanik has campaigned for the president, flying to at least one rally in Tulsa during the coronavirus pandemic to appear by his side. Yet Stefanik has long branded herself a pragmatic moderate, as she has easily won re-election in a district that stretches from the outskirts of Saratoga Springs across the Adirondack Mountains to the Canadian border. The race in the new North Country District, which backed Barack Obama in 2008 and 2012 and then went to Trump by 14 points in 2016, is not considered competitive, and Stefanik is favored to win. Still, she has played up that centrist image while promoting Trump. Alan.
Well, I think she's played her cards well. Remember, this is a gerrymandered district, although there was a Democratic congressman, albeit a blue dog, right-wing Democratic congressman. Rightish. I don't want to say right-wing because he wasn't. But she's played her cards well. Now, look, they have one black senator, and they give him a prominent thing the first night of the convention position. Then they have one young, articulate congresswoman, and they say, okay, we have to bring her out front because she gives us a better name, and we're going to use her the same way. So it's not surprising to see this happening.
Rosemary.
Well, I listened to her speech, you know, and it was not a full-throated "I love Trump and you should love him too" speech. It was much more like, "I'm a good person because I come from a place where they fought the American Revolution." I thought it was kind of dumb, Ticonderoga and Saratoga and all that. And yet it's so incredibly opportunistic that she can be centrist or pro-Trump depending on whether it stands her in good stead or not. I don't think it has anything to do with her district. And again, while I don't like her at all, I would not vote for her if I were in that district. I might even run against her. I'd love to debate her. I really wish the Democrats had put up a stronger candidate. Tedra Cobb ran against her and lost badly last time, and now she's trying again. And she's not doing great. She had several missteps. I think that's a district that might have been winnable if the Democrats had played it differently.
Judy.
You know, the Washington Post article was trying to make the points that her actual votes have been moderate, but it's clear from her speeches and her alignment with Trump in the last year or so that she is ambitious. One of the points of her speech was that the impeachment was illegal. I don't think the impeachment was illegal. I think she's incorrect on that. As a resident of the 21st District, I was surprised that they didn't think it was a competitive district, but Rosemary's right. Tedra Crabb did not do well last time, and I haven't seen a lot of evidence of her campaigning so far.
Would it surprise anybody to see her put into the Trump cabinet in the second term?
In a women. No, he doesn't like women. He's not going to put her in if he doesn't have to. He's using her as he does, just like he is his daughter-in-laws and other, and Kellyanne and other women who are pretty and likable and young, and they appeal to a demographic he doesn't appeal to. He uses them. And they go along with it, just like Nikki Haley, the queen of opportunists, because it advances their own ambitions, not because they have the public good at heart.
Rosemary, but you don't have to like... You don't have to like somebody to put him in the cabinet.
No, I don't think he's gonna. He doesn't like women. It's not a person.
Well,
he doesn't trust.
Okay, just remember I said so. You want to put a dollar on it or not?
What position?
Yeah,
what is she qualified?
What'd you say? Who's qualified for any
Aren't
of
you
it?
Betting against yourself?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
always
I mean,
a bad
we'll
thing
see
to do.
More. I'm quite sure we'll see more of Stefanik. I think she's she might have a chance to rise, and I think everyone is right. She's very ambitious, and she is playing the sort of, you know, both sides here, sort of, you know, centrist, yet also a Trump supporter. Depending on where things go, she'll moderate or go more towards Trump. Well, she is one of those politicians who's truly a politician. She wants to succeed. And she has not really identified her true beliefs so far. She goes back and forth, which I'm hoping voters pay attention to, because that's the kind of things that get politicians in trouble eventually, because they're not really honest about what their beliefs are. They're just shifting positions a lot. And this is what gives a lot of people a sense of the untrustworthiness of political figures.
I was struck last night in the speeches by House members and even senators of how they were really running their own race too. They were obviously appealing for votes for themselves.
You will remember, Joe, that McConnell gave them the green light in the Senate. Of course, that's where he is, and said to his people, "We've had announcements of this. Go ahead and save yourselves, because this is going to be a bad election."
So these are people who are going and speaking during the convention, and I guess by talking more about their own credentials, they're saving themselves. Is that right?
I suspect so.
Yeah. All right, we're out of time. Thanks to everybody for being with us this morning. Alan, thank you very much. I appreciate
it.
Rosemary Armeo, Vera Carias-Kelly, and Judy Patrick, thank you. I appreciate it. We will be back with more right after this.